I'll be reading Romans chapter 12, verse 2. Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed to the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, His good, pleasing, and perfect will.
Good morning. I gave a call to Dave and Glenda this morning about 10 minutes before class started, and they got on their way safely, and at that time they were just 35 miles outside of Des Moines, so just they got off well, so keep them in your prayers today as they travel from this heat to greater heat, I anticipate, as they go south, so that's not so good. I appreciate your patience last Sunday when went so far past time. I will try to make up for that today by sticking a little closer to my notes, but I do appreciate that. I did visit with the elders about that. There was a little concern there. It was interesting, you know, preachers, we all struggle with being long-winded and things. You know that. And we often heard from Dan, you know, as he lamented the clock up there. And, oh my, look how late it is already. Wow. what was always funny about that is my wife would sit over there and say, preach on, preach on. Don't worry about the clock. But now that I'm up here, she's over there going like this. So I don't know what's up with that, but anyways, Kathy and I will celebrate 30 years of marriage tomorrow, so thank you. That applause is for you, Kathy. I didn't think I would do anything 30 years long in life, but thank you. We're going to sneak off this afternoon and go do a little camping, so we won't be with you this evening. And next week, I promised not to preach over, because Ron will be preaching. we've got doing a wedding Saturday evening in Omaha, so we'll not be with you here next week, and appreciate Ron filling in our absence. And sorry, I'm going to miss that. It sounds like you guys are in for a grilling, so I'll have to hear about that when I get back. Today I wanted to share with us what I really think is a key to happiness. And for me, it's about change. And we've talked about change before, and I wanted to revisit the topic again because, as I said, I really believe the path to happiness that we seek as God's children is wrapped up in how we handle change in our lives. And in many ways, I think, in inviting and seeking change and growth in our lives. When I think about how Kathy and I have been married for 30 years, it had to do a lot with changing. She needed to change a lot. I mean, I needed to change a lot in order for us to do that. And that's really true. It really is true. There were things that we needed to grow together as a couple, and that meant we needed to change some things. And there were things that I needed to grow and mature as an individual. Things, and that means change. I needed to grow up and change, and for Kathy as well. And because we were willing to do that, not always right away, sometimes you fight through those things, and that's just part of a relationship. And we even had to change how we fought. Kathy had to learn how to hit me in the body so the bruises wouldn't show up on the face. You know, things like that. Honestly, we had to learn how to fight fair. And there's ways to do that. And we didn't know how to do that when we first got married. And we had to work on that, and we've gone to different marriage seminars at times and different things to learn those skills and to grow and change as a couple. And because of that, we're going to celebrate 30 years tomorrow, and I hope to one day stand in front of you and invite you to my 50th wedding anniversary. But for right now, Kathy's my first wife, so as I like to say, so. That gets her going. I probably ought to change that too, but there's still room to grow. But when we think about change as a path to happiness, I think we need to understand this too. It's about happiness is an inside job. And the changes that I think we need to talk about today, or the change maybe that we need to talk about today, is something that happens on the inside. And before you change anything else in your life out here, I really think we need to be reflective and assess what's going on inside. Because if you don't change who you are, any external changes, I've learned, are really temporary. And they might feel good at the moment, but they're not lasting. And they're not the things that lead to what I believe defines real happiness. So here's the 5 points that I think will help us to be able to do this, to look at change from the inside out, if you will. And the first thing we want to talk about is getting ready for change. I think we have to get ready for change. I don't think we just wake up one morning and say we're going to do this. We have to prepare for it. And we also have to identify what needs to be changed. We need to make that assessment and honestly think about, okay, here's an issue, here's a problem, here's a situation, what needs to change? Thirdly, we need to think about letting go of old habits and making room for change. Making room for change. We want to talk a little bit about learning some coping skills that will help us with the stress that may be the reason we need to look at some change. And then finally, incorporating changes into our lives. But before we go any further, I want you to understand that this is a biblical concept. The Bible talks to us a lot about change. And when you think about our lives in general, there are things, we deal with change every day in so many different ways. And this is a biblical idea. And let me just share with you several passages. Matthew 18:3 says, "And he said, truly I tell you, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven." You know, we need to focus on what those childlike characteristics that God is talking about here, or that Jesus is talking about here, that are so important. And I think the key ones are is that hope and the trust, that unquestioning hope, unquestioning trust that children have. And Jesus is telling us, this is how you need to see me and my Father. You've got to have this kind of faith, this unquestioning faith. You know, don't you just love it, dads, when our kids come to us with their broken toys and they just simply say, fix it. You know, and this, the things they bring to us, the mangled, tattered messes that toys can become, but they trust and believe without question that daddies can fix those things, even when we can't. They believe we can. And that's the attitude and the spirit we need to have towards God. And unfortunately, at too many times in our lives, we need to change some things about our faith, about our trust, and about our perspective towards God. Truly, I tell you, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Romans 12:2, Logan read for us, and I'm going to refer to this a couple of times, and I want to read it again. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, Paul writes to the Romans. But be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Again, it's the point that change begins on the inside, the renewing of your mind. Then what happens? Well, then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, His good, pleasing, and perfect will. And until we know what that will is, how can we move forward and put it into practice to make sure that we are carefully following it, like we talked about in Bible class this morning? This is also an idea that we find in the Old Testament from Jeremiah chapter 15 and verse 7. He writes, I will winnow them with a winnowing fork at the gates of the land, at the city gates of the land. I will bring bereavement and destruction on my people, for they have not changed their ways. Again, this idea of an inside job is seen in Ephesians chapter 4, beginning at verse 23, where Paul writes, to be made new. And I'm kind of focusing on that word new there. When we think about being made new, it is a beautiful example of a change process, if you will, really a transformation. To be made new in the attitudes, excuse me, In the attitudes of our minds, of your minds, as he writes there. Again, that inside job. And to put on the new self, created to be like God in true righteousness and holiness. Therefore, each of you must put off falsehood and speak truthfully to your neighbor, for we are all members of one body. And might I remind you, membership has its privileges. From Colossians chapter 3, beginning at verse 9. Do not lie to each other, since you have taken off your old self with its practices and put on the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge in the image of the Creator. Here there is no Gentile, no Jew, circumcised or uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave or free, but Christ is in all and is in all. Again, that idea of a new self. A couple more here. From Romans chapter 6 and verse 4, we were therefore buried with him through baptism into death, just as Christ was raised from the dead through the glory of the Father. We too may live a new life, a better life, if you will. Galatians 6:15. Neither circumcision nor uncircumcision means anything. What counts is the new creation. Again, that idea of being changed to be more like him. And then finally, I would share this with you from Mark chapter 2, beginning at verse 21. No one sews a patch of unshrunk cloth on an old garment. Otherwise, the new piece will pull away from the old, making the tear worse. And no one pours new wine into old wineskins. Otherwise, the wine will burst the skins, and both the wine and the wineskins will be ruined. No, they pour new wine into new wineskins. The point that I thought here in regards to that particular illustration is simply, how often do we hold on to the old and it brings ruin to the new? How often do we try to live in two worlds at the same time? Living for Christ on one hand and living, keeping a foot, if you will, in old ways, in old traditions, in old habits, whatever it might be. And the lesson learned from Mark chapter 2 is when we do that, that old brings ruin, if you will, to the new. All right, getting ready for change. I think that simply begins with not being afraid to look at ourselves, to take, if you will, to make an honest assessment of what's going on in our lives. I think sometimes we fear to do that because we're afraid of what we're going to find. We're afraid of those skeletons that we might find in our closet. Oh, we know they're there. It's not like we're going to discover anything new about ourselves, but we're afraid to look at it. We worry that we're going to find something we don't like, and we just need to understand that none of us are perfect, and we all have those dark corners in our lives. And it's until we make the decision to honestly look at it, to realize that it is a problem, to realize that it is an issue, to realize that it is an obstacle in our relationship with God, until we see that, are we going to be motivated to do something about it? You know, it's like when my garage gets messy. If I just leave the house through the front door, I never see the mess, and I don't have to deal with it. Most of the time I'm walking through it and tripping over something, and I'm reminded I've got to take care of that. And that's the way we need to be with our hearts and with our thinking, to be honest about the garbage that is there so that we are motivated to do something about it, to be reminded, if you will, that we need to do something about it. But along with this idea of getting ready for change and assessing what's there and realizing that there's things we need to address when we're honest with ourselves, is also to think about making small changes. I think so often the efforts that we do make to better ourselves, to make those changes that we know we need to be made, is that we're trying to do too much at once. And we need to realize those little changes add up to big differences. Take small steps. We need to get away from that attitude of an all or nothing approach. I've got lots of little projects going on around my house, and there's just no way I can get them all done at the same time. But I work a little bit on this one, work a little bit on that one, and before you know it, sometimes after years, you get those little projects done. But those little steps that you do along the way do add up to getting it done. When you take an all-or-nothing approach, another problem with this is that most of the time we just simply don't have the energy to make those big changes. And when that happens, we fail to see the significance of those little changes and the motivation that successful little steps can give us to keep going in the right direction. Along with getting ready for the change, and I've already alluded to this, we need to identify what needs to be changed. But I'd like to be a little more specific here and suggest to us that one of the things that needs to be identified as something significant in regards to change in our lives is addressing stress and negative thinking. Stress and negative thinking, I think, are the most common things that people need to change. It's certainly been true in my life. Examples of stress include fears and resentments, dwelling on the past, worrying about the future, living in unforgiveness, a topic we've talked quite a bit about here recently. Those things create incredible stress in our lives, and it brings us down. Examples of negative thinking is, again, that all-or-nothing approach that I talked about. But it's also that negative thinking, it's really just as simple as what are you going to focus on, the negative or the positive? Kathy and I have, we contracted with some people to do some work at our house, and it hasn't gotten done yet. And we signed a contract to get this done 2 months ago. And you know, you can make up your mind to be frustrated about that and to be angry about it and take away all the joy that this little project is going to represent for our family, or just realize, you know what, with the weather conditions and the different things that have been going on that created the delays, there isn't anything I can do about it. So getting stressed and angry and frustrated about it isn't going to help the project to get done in any way, shape, or form. Now, sure, it's frustrating, but it's a matter of what am I going to dwell on? What am I going to dwell on? And that's a choice. I can look at the negative aspects of this, and there are. But there's also positive aspects of this whole scenario as well. And by choosing to dwell on those positive things, I don't feel the stress as I wait for things to take place. One of the things about stress in our lives is that it leads to often depression because we think the expectations that we place on ourselves so often are unrealistic. And we need to be realistic with ourselves. We need to be honest with ourselves. Taking that all or nothing thinking is, along with the stress, can lead to that depression, that anxiety, feeling uncomfortable, which can actually lead to addictive behavior. You know, when we do that, we feel that stress, we feel that anxiety, we feel that depression. It doesn't feel good, and so we want to do something about it. And too often people turn to alcohol, they turn to drugs, or they turn to food even. I mean, when I think about the extra pounds that I carry around, I can attribute it to the fact that for me, food is often turned to for comfort. And that's always the worst reason for eating. And the reason that I do that is usually because I'm dealing with stress or frustrations, and rather than dealing with the problem, making the decision to make changes that would be positive in my life, I get wrapped up in the stress. I get wrapped up in the anxiety. I get wrapped up in the depression, and I just want to feel better. So I go and eat. And isn't it amazing, though, when you go and eat to be comforted, it's not carrots and broccoli and cauliflower you choose. It's ho-hos. It's cake. It's Snickers. It's, you know, those things that, well, give you a body like this. All right. Along with that, we need to think about making room for change. It's not enough just to want to change. It's not enough just to even to identify what needs to be changed. But we have to make room for the change. The most overlooked part of change is, I think, exactly that, making room for it. This is the missing point, I think, in most self-help plans. And the reason why most people fail, we focus on why we're unhappy, thinking that alone will lead to change. And we spend time, most of the effort, trying to understand the issue. And again, we find out that that's just part of change. You also have to let go of the bad habits so that you don't repeat the mistakes. Have you ever asked yourself, how could I be so smart but do such dumb things? I don't think I'm probably the only one who's ever made that statement. That's what happens when you try to change, I think, without making room for change. When you're tense, you tend to do what's familiar and wrong instead of what's right. Like eating the ho-hos. You tense, you get stressed, and you think, well, what's the easiest thing that I can do? And the easiest thing is usually the thing you've always done. Okay? For me, like I said, the example was comfort eating. For you, it might be something else. But so often, what it is that we've usually done hasn't been healthy. It hasn't been right. It's been the problem. But there's an automatic kick-in, if you will, that just kind of takes over, that automatic response. When you're tense, you tend to do what's familiar and wrong instead of what's new and right. And stress is an obstacle to change because when you're tense, your ego and fears get in the way. And change isn't just about what you learn. It's also about what you let go. Think of it this way. There are many coping skills that we need to be happy. And if you learn to do them all, but don't learn to relax, we're still going to find it hard to change. Because when you're tense, as I said already, you will continue to repeat what's familiar. And unfortunately, in many cases, what's familiar is the problem. It's what's wrong. So on the other hand, if you learn only one coping skill, what I would suggest is that you learn how to relax. Because through relaxation, you're going to be happier, and things become easier when we're relaxed. Because it reduces that stress, and it gives us time and the ability, I think, to truly be honest about the response that we need to make. And more importantly, the ability to make the more difficult choice. Because in the beginning, those changes are the more difficult choices. Even when we know they're positive, even when we know they're right, because they're not habitual yet, because they're not automatic, it is more difficult. But what's nice about that is with practice and with repetition, those new changes, those positive changes, can become the new automatic response that we make. So along with that, let's build on that point about learning some new coping skills. I think there's three key coping skills that we need to address as we think about this change that I'm talking about, changing from the inside. And it begins with learning how to reduce stress and relaxing, as well as learning how to stop dwelling on the negative and disqualifying the positives, and then finally, taking care of yourself. Health is a huge piece of this picture, and we need to understand that. Stress management is important because it helps you to reduce those anxieties, those fears, and those resentments that get in the way of making the changes that are necessary for us to have that happiness that I began talking about. Stress management helps us to live in the moment instead of dwelling in the past and also worrying about the future. Because it's in the moment where we need and where we want to experience that happiness and content. But if in our thoughts we're always worrying about the past, or worrying about dwelling on the past, I should say, and worrying about the future, we are not in the moment. And that's where we're going to experience that happiness. And so that, in order to experience that happiness there, that's where we have to be, rather than dwelling in the past and worrying about the future. It's hard to feel happy in the moment if you're not there. What happens when we're dwelling on that past is we're actually reliving those events that created the problems for us. Now, I'm making an assumption here. When I say dwelling on the past, I'm making the assumption that we're dwelling on negative things, and that's usually the case. That's usually the case. So if you're dwelling in the past is a happy, positive experience, well, I'm not necessarily downplaying that, but if that's where you're living your life, that's still a problem. That's still a problem. But when we constantly rerun those negative things that have happened in the past, it's like experiencing them again. No wonder they cause stress. No wonder that kind of thinking is stressful and unhealthy for us, because it's real in our minds. Relaxation is more than just a way to relax. It's a way to change your life. We just don't have the time to go into a more detailed discussion about relaxation techniques and coping skills. So if this is something that's touching your heart, I want to encourage you to get on the internet, do some research, look up some things, and find for you what will work for you in regards to some stress management ideas, some relaxation ideas, and some coping skills. And if you're having problems finding anything, let me know and I'll hook you up. But one of the things that I do want to say about this, going back to Romans 12:2, a lot of this has to deal with choices that we make, the decisions that we make about what we dwell on, about what we think about what we put our hope on. And I don't want that to sound like I'm oversimplifying things, because I realize when you connect the emotion to it, it is a challenge. But it is as simple as changing your thinking. We just all need help sometimes in doing that and finding that time, those skills that help us to cope during challenges, and finding that time to stress or to manage stress and take care of ourselves are important. Some of the things that you might find in your research that might be helpful are some things as simple as breathing exercises, yoga, exercise, meditation. Don't be frightened by that word meditation. I think lots of times when we bring up that word meditation, we get the idea of the Dalai Lama sitting up here in some awkward position and, you know, sitting around and going all day. Well, that is an example of meditation, but study what meditation is. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised that might be a very effective option for you. Certainly as God's children, when we think about managing stress and taking care of ourselves, we need to be looking at prayer and Bible study. And when I think about prayer and Bible study, the virtues that come along with prayer and Bible study are the same kinds of things that people find through meditation. And I think we can connect the two. I really do. So I'll not take the time to go into that, but I encourage you as you wrestle with today's lesson to think about what it is that you need to address. But I do want to say something more about this, about interpreting our experiences in a negative or a positive way. For example, thinking again about Kathy and I celebrating 30 years of marriage. All you married couples, I want you to do something right now. I want you to list, don't say it out loud. I want you to think about all the negative qualities of your spouse. Okay? Wow, some people grab pencil and paper. No, just think about it. Don't write them down. And next to that list, I want you to also put the list of all the positive things. Now, I tell you what, I can come up with a list of negative things for Kathy. Believe me. She's not that little angel that you think she is over there that you see sitting over there all the time, okay? Just ask her about the Reuben incident. I'll say no more. See, she's squirming already. But I also have a wonderfully long and beautiful list of positive characteristics about my wife as well. Here are those two lists. I just wrote them up. No, I didn't. My relationship with Kathy is defined by which list I spend time thinking about. And so is yours. And so when Kathy and I get into a tussle or we're having a difficult time, one of the things that I realize in assessing that situation is where my focus is. Where my focus is. And by simply changing that focus, my thinking, it changes the whole dynamic of that relationship. And as I've matured, I've done a much better job of staying focused on the positive things in Kathy's life, thus having the great and wonderful relationship that we're going to celebrate 30 years of tomorrow. That's just a perfect example, I think, of the idea Paul's referencing in Romans chapter 12 and verse 2. Changing your thinking will change your life. Stress management also teaches us, though, how to take better care of ourselves. And you know, we got to deal with that health. We got to deal with those issues as well. Let me share this with you. I'm rambling here a little bit as I kind of jostle some of these notes around. I want to share this with you. This is a prayer that you've all heard of before, but it's changed my life, and that's the Serenity Prayer. The Serenity Prayer, I believe, I did a little history on this, I think a lot of people associate the Serenity Prayer with the 12-step movement, with Alcoholics Anonymous. But they're not the ones who came up with it. They just put it to use. It's kind of an interesting history. And actually, the Serenity Prayer is a little bit longer than what most people quote. What we most often think of is, God grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference between the two. That idea, that philosophy, that prayer, however you want to say, truly has changed my life. Because it is the realization that there are some things in my life, in this world, in my family's life, that I can do nothing about. And I'm going to suggest to us that the problem is most of the time we become fixated on those things we can't do anything about in trying to change them. And we can't. And so it becomes frustrating. It becomes frustrating. And Alcoholics Anonymous learned that it led to addiction. And so one of the keys that they realize is we've got to teach people who are struggling with addiction to realize that there are things in their life they can't do anything about. And to take the time to assess and identify those things in their life that they can change, do something about those things, and then also to trust in God for that wisdom to know the difference and to focus the energy where it needs to be focused on. All right. Remember what it was like to teach our children how to ride a bike or to ride that bike for the first time without training wheels? Or to teach our children how to swim, I think is another good example. In some cases, we had to force our children. Force them. I can remember doing it again with Keelan, our grandson, and kind of reliving those experiences with Caleb and Tabitha. But, you know, we had to talk Keelan in to doing something that terrified him. To pedal that bike without those training wheels. Because in his mind, he just saw an accident coming. And you know what? He was right. He was right. So part of what we had to do as the parents in this case too is not only talk our children into doing something that scared them, but allowing them to crash. Didn't we? How many of you got videos of that kind of stuff? Isn't it great? See them flipping over handlebars and running into mailboxes and bushes. And oh, we're terrified at the moment, but then we laugh and laugh. And in a matter of sometimes moments, sometimes hours, sometimes days, they're speeding up and down the sidewalk like nobody's business. How about that first time coaching them to jump off the edge of the swimming pool or the dock into your arms? And they were just so afraid. And we had, again, convince them to do something that scared them. And be willing to let them, swallow some water in the process. But then again, after a few moments, a few hours, a few weeks, whatever it took, they were swimming like dolphins and enjoying the water. And now we're arguing to get them out of the water, when before we were arguing just to jump into the water. Well, I think sometimes that's what the change process is like for us. That first step is scary. It's scary. And when we first attempt to make the changes that we need to make in our life, we make mistakes. We fail. We fall flat on our face. But our Father encourages us to continue trying, just like we did with our children as we were teaching them some of those things as they were growing up. James chapter 4 and verse 8 says, "Come near to God, and He will come near to you. Wash your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Grieve, mourn, and wail. Change your laughter to mourning and your joy to gloom. Humble yourselves before the Lord, and He will lift you up." Let me share with you one more passage. And this is a passage that's just become kind of, I don't know, my heart just keeps going to this passage in James chapter 1. James chapter 1, beginning at verse 19. "My dear brothers, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. For man's anger does not bring about the righteous life that God desires." Again, I just hear this idea of taking time to be reflective, to focus on the positive, to think about what needs to be done, to intelligently make the decision, to intelligently make the choice. Verse 21 goes on with that idea of preparing ourselves for that change, if you will, to make room for the change. "Therefore, get rid of all the moral filth and the evil that is so prevalent, and humbly accept the word planted in you, which can save you. Do not merely listen to the word, but do what it says. Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says. Anyone who listens to the word but does not do what it says is like the man who looks at his face in the mirror, and after looking at himself goes away and immediately forgets what he looks like. But the man who looks intently into the perfect law that gives freedom and continues to do this, not forgetting what he has heard, but doing it, he will be blessed in what he does." Today the invitation is quite simply, what is it that you need to do today? I know you've already done this. You've already made that assessment. You know, you probably have a pretty good idea of where you're at with God. What do you need to do today to get closer to God? What has He called? What has He commanded that you have yet to step forward on? What reason is there not for doing that today? Won't you come while together we stand and sing the song of encouragement?